This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Charles Best was a first-year social studies teacher in a public school in the Bronx when he saw a need that had obviously been observed by other teachers. Many of his low-income students simply couldn't afford to buy some of the materials they needed to bring with them into the classroom. What sets Charles Best apart from those other teachers is that he decided to do something about that, and what he did has had a significant impact. He started DonorsChoice.org in 2000, and since that time has raised more than $225 million, which has funded nearly a half million school projects. Charles Best was in town to speak at UNC Charlotte yesterday as part of the Chancellor's Annual Speakers Series, and no wonder, Mr. Best was recognized for his work by Fortune magazine as one of their 40 under 40 hottest rising stars in business for three consecutive years, and Fast Company called DonorsChoose.org as one of the 50 most innovative companies in the world twice. Well, we wanted to hear more about this venture, and so we asked Charles Best to join us, and he has this morning from New York City. Welcome to the program. Welcome back to Charlotte.
Hey, thank you,
so
Mike.
So to speak. Thank you. You're welcome. There are a lot of teachers, as I said, in the New York City public school system, and when you were a first-year teacher there, there were probably more than a few first-year teachers like yourself working there. What was it about you? What was it about your classroom and those children and that time that made you see something that others did not, or motivated you to do something about what you saw while others did nothing?
Well, you know, Mike, it was equally my colleagues who inspired me. My colleagues and I would spend a lot of our own money on copy paper and pencils trying to provide those materials that our students didn't have. And we would talk in the teacher's lunchroom about books that we wanted our students to read and a field trip we wanted to take them on and a pair of microscopes that we needed for a science experiment. And I was just so inspired by the projects that my colleagues wanted to do with their students. I was a first-year teacher kind of listening wide-eyed to these incredible ideas that my colleagues had. And it just felt a shame for no one to hear about these ideas other than us teachers in the lunchroom. And I figured that there must be people out there who'd want to help teachers like us if they could see exactly where their money was going.
Mm. Parents must have known, right?
Yeah, they did. The parents of our students, you know, for the most part, we couldn't expect them to go deep into their own pockets to provide the novels we wanted their kids to read or the field trip we wanted to take them on or the art supplies we needed for an art project, which really left us seeing our students going without the materials and experiences that they needed for a great education.
Hmm. Did this surprise you? As a first-year teacher, did anybody prepare you for what you were about to encounter, either while you were in college or as you were? I guess most teachers go through a practiced, what do you call it, an internship where you student teach. Did this surprise you, or did you know this coming in?
I guess it shouldn't have been surprising, but it really struck me because where I had gone to high school, we went on field trips into the woods. We had graphing calculators for trigonometry. We had all the tools you'd need to do a woodworking project. We did not want for anything. But when I started teaching in the Bronx, I saw firsthand that all schools are not created equal. And the disparity between the resources that I'd had when I was in high school versus the resources available to the students I was teaching did really strike me, and it was the kind of the motivating energy to start Donors Choose.
And where did you go to high school?
I went to a boarding school called St. Paul's in New Hampshire.
So it was a private school.
That's right.
So is this a problem that you think is endemic within the public school system in the United States, or is this just pockets of it in certain systems or in certain areas of certain systems around the country?
It's a good question. Per pupil spending ranges so widely. In Newark, New Jersey, a economically struggling city, per pupil spending is actually pretty healthy. I think over $20,000 per pupil. There are parts of Mississippi and even California where per pupil spending is in the $6,000 range, which is absolutely not enough to provide even essentials to students. Sometimes the materials are not there because there's simply not enough funding of the system. In other cases, the materials aren't there because the system is not wisely allocating the dollars they do have. It can be for both reasons. But the bottom line is there are a whole lot of kids, most of them from low-income communities, who don't have the books, the art supplies, the technology that they need for a rigorous education.
So I want to be clear about this. This is not just a case of people coming from low-income families who can't afford all the stuff that kids get for back to school, like the book bags and the spiral notebooks and the pens and the rulers and the protractors. It's not just that, although that's part of it. They probably don't have a lot of expendable income for things like that. It is basic educational tools that classrooms should have and which should be supplied, one would think, by the school itself or by the school system itself. Am I right?
Thank you for making that clarification. And in fact, the kind of sort of personal disposable items like notebooks, one's own notebook, one's own pencil, account for a very small fraction of the project requests on DonorsChoose.org. The bulk of the projects on our site request fundamental classroom resources like dictionaries or microscopes or paints and paintbrushes for the art teacher to actually be able to do art. Another chunk of the projects on our site are enrichment projects. They go beyond what you would expect the taxpayer to provide. It could be a teacher seeking therapeutic horseback riding for disabled students. It could be a science teacher who wants butterfly cocoons for students to learn about the life cycle of the butterfly. And those resources might not be ones that you'd think of as an injustice if they were not available in classrooms. Right. But nevertheless, they're exactly the kind of resource that most brings the subject matter to life.
Now, you and your teachers, your fellow teachers, were spending your own money where you could on some of the things that were missing from your classroom that you thought would be valuable and enhance education and actually make education possible for these young people in some cases. And clearly, teachers who make no money to begin with cannot be doing this. It's unsustainable. So you came up with Donors Choose. Did the idea come to you in a flash, or was it something that you developed over a period of time, or did fragments of that idea come from other teachers that you were talking to in the lunchroom?
Well, so we'd had these lunchroom conversations about materials we wanted our kids to have, projects we wanted to do with them, and the what I most wanted for my students was Little House on the Prairie. Those of your listeners who only saw the TV show might think that I was dumbing things down, but those of your listeners who have read the Little House on the Series books will remember that they are a gripping, unsentimental account of pioneer life. Mm-hmm. Ma and Pa fail to make a good living from farming. Railroad tycoons and grain monopolies make all the money. Ma has a racist attitude toward Native Americans that's typical of her time. Pa can actually put himself in their shoes. I will talk all night about how great Little House on the Prairie is, so I'm to stop myself. But my students, even those who had never left New York City, they loved this book too. But the system was not about to underwrite the Little House on the Prairie series for each of my students.
Why not?
Well, you know, I think there are 9 books in the series. And, you know, if in the middle of the school year, you discover that you want a set of novels for your students, that would almost always be considered an out of band unbudgeted for item.
Right. And
there just was no place for me to go financially to get my students that book.
Okay.
And so every day before school, I would go to the copy shop that was open 24 hours a day, and I would make photocopies of that day's section of Little House on the Prairie, which probably violated some copyright laws. And as I was making those copies, I started thinking of all the resources my colleagues wanted for their students. And it just occurred to me that there were people out there who might want to help if they could actually pick a project that that spoke to them personally and see exactly where their dollars were going.
And that's how this website works. And you started this website, and your colleagues, I'm told, initially posted about 10 projects of their own that they wanted to see funded through this method. And you ended up anonymously funding the projects, and your colleagues thought that the website was working, and
and word, that's right.
And word spread. So how long afterward did it take for the thing to actually work? Because you would have bankrupted yourself in short order if you were funding all these projects.
That's right. And first, let me tell you, it was a rudimentary website that my colleagues were using to post those first 10 projects. I'd paid $2,000 to a programmer who'd recently arrived from Poland, who was willing to code all these pencil and paper drawings that I had made of just how I wanted the website to look. So super rudimentary. As you said, 10 of my colleagues created projects. I was living at home with my parents, so I was able to spare some of my teacher's salary to fund my colleagues' projects. Because I did so anonymously, they mistakenly thought that the website worked. Rumor spreads to other teachers in the Bronx. They start creating hundreds of projects. I was in a really tough spot, not knowing how I was going to get these projects funded, a lot more than I could afford to fund myself by living at home. And my students came to the rescue. They saw the potential of this experiment to change their lives at school. I think they also felt bad for me. And they volunteered every day after school for about 4 months to spread word to potential donors.
Let me just jump in here and say we're talking to Charles Best, who is the founder of DonorsChoose.org here on Charlotte Talks on WFAE. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, sure thing. So my students were volunteering to help spread word to potential donors about this website that they had helped me launch. And they addressed and compiled 2,000 letters by hand to people all over the country telling them about this website where someone with $10 could be a classroom hero. And we sorted the mail ourselves because we wanted to get the cheapest postal rate. And every desk in my classroom represented a different region of the country piled high with envelopes. And then we carted the sorted letters to the post office and crossed our fingers, and it worked. My students' letter writing campaign generated $30,000 in donations to projects on our site.
That's an amazing story. And that's an education unto itself for these kids.
I think it was, and I think they are proud of what happened after they volunteered their time in that really generous way to help get the site off the ground.
We've done programs about this in the past because we've done programs on everything, but this is an example of crowdsourcing or crowdfunding in this case, where you put out a request for something, in this case money, and the crowd responds or it doesn't respond. And of course, in your case, they did, and they do. You came up with this actually before the term crowdfunding had been coined. So how does it actually work? Is it simply a matter of a teacher coming up with something that he or she wants, putting it on your website, and people browse the site and decide whether or not to give to it?
That's right. Any public school teacher or charter school teacher in America sees a need, comes up with a project they want to do with their students. They go to DonorsChoose.org. They write a simple essay describing the student learning experience that they envision. And then they identify the materials they need, whether that's the bus to take students to the museum or whether that's the butterfly cocoons to do the science activity. And we vet and validate the teacher's project. We'll email follow-up questions to the teacher if anything's unclear about exactly what students are going to learn and what activity they're going to be able to do. Then the project is up on the site. There are about 41,000 classroom project requests live at any moment on our site. And when a group of donors fund a teacher's project, we don't pass through cash to the teacher. We purchase the resources and have them delivered to the classroom.
Charles Best is the founder of DonorsChoose.org. There are lots of things to talk about, and there are a number of North Carolina and a number of Charlotte schools that are taking advantage of that website, and we'll find out more about them and some of the things that they're requesting money for and how you get involved in this as well as we go along. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Charles Best is our guest. He was here last night to speak at UNC Charlotte because he is the founder of DonorsChoose.org. It's an interesting way to raise money for projects that are not otherwise funded for classrooms around the country. And we were talking, Charles, a little while ago about how this started, and there were no funders. Teachers had already put up their requests, and you were funding them out of your little piggy bank yourself. Obviously, they could not continue, and quickly, there were donors found by your students to contribute to the process. How long did it take for you to have a national reach, which you now have?
Well, for our first few years, we launched in 2000, and for the first few years, we were just open to public schools in New York City, and donors came to us because they got letters that my students had written to them, or because they donors might have read a local news story. And in 2003, Oprah Winfrey caught wind of this experiment, this philanthropic experiment growing out of a Bronx classroom, and her segment about our site prompted a whole lot of inquiries from other parts of the country, people interested in seeing us expand. And the very first state that we expanded to was North Carolina.
Why?
Well, in great part because an entrepreneur in the Research Triangle area, Michael Brader-Arahe, called us up and said, I want to bring you to North Carolina. I'll do whatever it takes to make that happen. And we felt that really throughout North Carolina, there was a level of kind of forward-thinking education leaders and elected officials. Former Governor Jim Hunt immediately saw the potential of DonorsChoose.org to help North Carolina teachers. And so for all of those reasons, it just felt right to make North Carolina our very first expansion.
I was going to save the Oprah effect for later, but since you brought her up already, we've had authors on the program who've told us that when Oprah chose their book as a book of the month, this is back when she was doing her daily TV show, it didn't just put them and their book on the map. It changed their lives permanently. Oprah featured you, as you said, on a segment on Innovative Teachers back in 2003. I know that it crashed your website within minutes of her even mentioning your names. Did it have a long coattail effect as well?
It did, and let me tell you how painful it was to for our website to crash after she uttered our name on air, and to think that there were thousands of donors trying to give to teachers' classroom projects but unable to do so because our website had crashed. But we did manage to get back up about an hour afterward, and a whole lot of donors gave to a whole lot of projects. And we fielded inquiries like the one we did from North Carolina about donors choose expanding to other parts of the country. And we would really trace the roots of our national expansion to this Oprah show. Hmm. So in that sense, it absolutely had a permanent, lasting effect. It was in 2007 that we opened our site to all the public schools in America, and I don't see how we would have done it without that Oprah show.
I know that you keep a lot of statistics about how people use your website from across the country. And I'm just curious, are you seeing similar or different needs from teachers across the nation? Or do they vary substantially from region to region or school district to school district? Or is it pretty much the same? I need this.
You know, we do see different scales of requests for technology versus books, or math and science and engineering versus the arts and humanities. That does vary a little bit region by region. In Charlotte, we really see teachers requesting all of the above. Charlotte is one of the most active users of DonorsChoose.org, which is why I'm so excited to be talking with you and acknowledging just how involved Charlotte teachers have been and how dedicated Charlotte citizens have been.
Well, I don't know whether that's a good thing or a bad thing that we have people from Charlotte, or schools in Charlotte, teachers in Charlotte, making liberal use of your website, and that's liberal with a small L, because that means there are lots of needy teachers out there, lots of needy schools out there, lots of schools that are not well equipped in the CMS, the Charlotte-Mecklenburg system. Am I reading that the wrong way?
You might be reading it correctly, but there might be a second explanation. Okay. So you're absolutely right, Mike, that the first explanation is that possibly there are too many classrooms in Charlotte-Mecklenburg that don't have all the materials they need to provide a really rigorous, vivid education to students. The second explanation, though, is that Charlotte has a whole lot of teachers who won't stand for the status quo and who are thinking outside the box, are thinking beyond beyond chalkboard and textbooks, and who want to really show how the subject matter applies to real life, and who want pedometers so that students can measure their pace and see physics and math in real life, who want to take their students to an art museum or on a field trip to a farm. And some of those experiences are not ones that you necessarily expect a school system to underwrite. And so the high rate of participation we're seeing in Charlotte could be equally testament to the kind of innovative capacity and innovative drive of Charlotte teachers as to the classroom needs in your community.
None of this would be possible, of course, without donors. So let's talk about your donors. Who are they? Are they evenly distributed throughout the country? Do you find certain areas produce more generous donors? And because it's called donors choose the projects they want to fund at the level they choose to fund them. Do you find that donors generally are more supportive of projects and requests from their area versus if I'm living in North Carolina, would I be more likely to pick out a Charlotte or a Raleigh school versus a school in California?
Good question. So 78% of our donors are women. So we'd love to get more guys on the site. We do see donors and teachers throughout the country, but there are some concentrations. And what we always focus on is regions of the country where there might be more teachers posting classroom requests than donors who are funding them. And in fact, in North Carolina, the response of teachers was so great that for quite a long time, and even to this day, the success rate of North Carolina projects is actually a little lower than it is in the rest of the country. And that's not so much because there aren't generous citizens who want to support teachers' projects, but because there are just so many North Carolina teachers who create projects on our site. 50% of the donors who give to projects are doing so locally. 50% of donations are made by a donor who lives within 25 miles of the teacher and classroom that they are supporting. But that also means that fully 50% of our donors are going beyond their borders to find a project that they really like. And so they're searching for Shakespeare or gardening or yoga or the sport they played in high school or the book they read to their kid last night or their favorite author. And when they find a project that matches that topical passion, they don't care if it's five states away.
And your website makes this incredibly easy to do. That's why I was so impressed with it. I mean, you can do a search for school system or state. You can do a search for a particular kind of project. So if you have a particular interest that you really believe in, and you think maybe your teacher did something for you in school and you think that should be given to kids around the country, you can type that in and you're likely to find it, a request for funding for that, and you can then give money to it. This effort has been praised by the First Lady, Michelle Obama, as exactly the kind of social innovation we should be encouraging across the country. Those are her words. And she's right, because there is a need, but doesn't that beg the larger question, why? Why should there be a need? Because you said that this process puts the public back into public education. And you've also said that when you began teaching, you and your colleagues quickly realized that your students didn't have access to the same resources you had growing up. And you knew that there were supplies and resources that could help your students, but the school district simply could not afford them. But aren't many of the things that you're raising money for, haven't they traditionally been part of what the public school package has brought to the table that no longer does?
It is a very fair question, Mike, to ask whether donors choose might be letting government off the hook by letting citizens step in where the system is falling short. And we actually see the opposite happening. Tell you one anecdote about a teacher in Chicago who was once told that she would be fired if she created another project on Donors Choose, because her first project, by requesting dictionaries, revealed that the school didn't have dictionaries, and the school principal did not want that need exposed. And so we think of Donors Choose first as a way for teachers to go public and expose classroom needs that might otherwise be papered over or hidden by the powers that be. And when donors give to projects on our site, they do not think that they have just solved the problem and that the state legislature can stand down. In fact, they come out of their donation experience fired up, almost politically energized, because they now feel a personal connection with a classroom, often on the other side of the tracks, that doesn't have sufficient materials, and that is on their mind when they go into the voting booth. Mm-hmm. So 60% of our donors say that their experience on our site made them more interested in systemic reform. 22% even say that they're more likely to vote in an education budget referendum as a result of being on our site.
So it's opening their eyes.
That's exactly right. Opening their eyes in a more vivid and kind of energizing way than mm-hmm. statistics in a newspaper article.
Because, you know, I did a lot of thinking about this yesterday. I went to a public high school, and we took field trips, and we had art supplies, and we had books, and we had a big library. We had a media center. This isn't the dark ages. This is a long time ago. We had all this stuff, and it all came. Some of it came from the PTA. They raised money, and they had bake sales, and so did the Key Club and all these other student-run organizations. But most of this, the funding for the language lab, where we sat down with headphones and recorded and played ourselves back to make sure that our accent was right, that was all from the school system. You're saying that much of that doesn't come from the school system anymore, and I'm wondering when that happened. When did that start happening, or has it always been with us? Did I go to an overprivileged public school?
Yeah, you know, I think I would need to defer to some experts on kind of the history of school funding. And yet, I think that you're right to point out that the PTA was doing some fundraising even when you were in school enjoying some of those resources. And that language lab sounds amazing. And we think of Donors Choose often as the fundraising PTA for schools in high poverty communities that don't have the ability to tap parents for some of those materials.
Hmm. Vernon emails, my wife Michelle and I met you at UNC Charlotte last night, and we were inspired by your work. We see much international potential for Donors Choose. Do you have an expansion plan outside the USA? And if so, what are the greatest obstacles that you see to that?
Great question. We do receive inquiries every couple days from people in other countries and even people in other sectors in the United States who want to see Donors Choose or our model of peer-to-peer crowdfunding extend to schools in India, social workers in the United States, and so forth. And we do not have plans to expand Donors Choose beyond U.S. borders or beyond our K-12 public education system. But we have built out a portal of our site. We call it Lessons Learned, so that we can give a running start to anyone who wants to create a peer-to-peer giving, a crowdfunding site for schools in India or social workers in the United States.
Mm. Does every teacher request, because teachers get to decide what they want to put up on the website, does every teacher request get posted to the website, or does someone decide whether or not it's worthy of being posted? Do they vet the request or judge it in some way in terms of whether or not it's worthy of some kind of support?
A project on Donors Choose needs to meet some very simple criteria. It can't discriminate, it can't proselytize a particular religious denomination, and the resources requested need to be essential to a student learning experience. But those are pretty broad criteria, and they really do give teachers almost full creative freedom in coming up with the project that will make the biggest difference for their kids. And when a teacher submits that project, we do vet it and validate it. We don't just do some basic fact-checking, but we read over the teacher's essay and email the teacher follow-up questions if anything is unclear about what students will learn. And the people who do this work are teachers themselves. Hundreds of teachers who've had lots of projects funded through DonorsChoose.org have proven themselves to be incredible educators and who volunteer their time to vet other teachers' project requests. You could think of this approach as academic peer review meets Wikipedia. Yeah. And these teacher reviewers will send about 20% of projects back to the draft stage with follow-up questions for the teachers who authored those projects.
We're talking to Charles Best, who is the founder of DonorsChoose.org this morning on WFAE. Do the requests come only from, and do you accept requests only from, high poverty schools, or can any public school in the country, no matter how well it's funded by its PTA or by its school system, make requests?
Any public school, any public charter school in America can use our site, and we welcome any and all schools. About 80%, a little more than 80% of the projects funded on our site go into low-income public schools, but that means 20% of the projects on our site are from middle-income schools.
The concept here, and I've said this earlier, allows individual donors to connect with individual needs or projects, even with individual teachers and classrooms. Is that part of the reason, you think, that you have been successful? Because there's a humanity to this. There's a one-on-one connection.
I think that the humanity of the experience is exactly what has fueled our growth. We think of ourselves as a site where someone with $1 can be a full-fledged philanthropist. And that means searching for projects that match your passion, picking the one that makes your eye twinkle, seeing exactly where your $1 went and how it was spent, and then hearing back from the classroom, the people that you chose to help in a really vivid way. The web and this model of crowdfunding makes that possible, even for someone who's giving $1. And I think that the humanity of it is, Mike, I think the best way you could describe it.
And the way your website is constructed, you can see, and we'll talk a little bit maybe about this later, but you can see the progress of the request. If the teacher needs X amount of dollars, you can see those dollars coming in almost in real time. And you can decide whether or not you've given enough, I suppose, or come back and give more. And you also see when they've been successful at fulfilling that request. How much more information do you as a donor get about the project that you've donated to once it is a success, once it's been successfully funded, I guess, is the question.
Sure. Well, if you give, say, $10 to a project of your choice, and Mike, since you brought up your old school experience, what was your favorite subject in high school?
English, probably.
All right.
And well, history. English and history.
Well, we'll talk about how you could support an English project on DonorsChoose.org.
Okay, well, let's do that after the break. We have to take a break. We're talking to Charles Best, founder of DonorsChoose.org. You can check that out even as we talk today on the program, and we're coming right back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Charles Best is our guest. He is the founder of DonorsChoose.org. It is a website at which teachers submit requests for funding for special projects like books and field trips and other supplies that they feel would enhance their students' education in public and public charter school classrooms. And then people can go there and choose the project to which they want to contribute. You can see almost in real time the success of that project being funded. And after the fact, you can find out more about the success of the project that you have funded. There's a humanity to this, which I think contributes a lot to the success. But you wanted to talk about specifically how this might work. And you asked me what my favorite subject in high school was, and I would say it was either English or history. And you want to give me an example of how that might work from a donor's perspective.
That's right. So Mike, let's say that you did a search for Charlotte teachers projects for English literature, and you found one that you really liked. Even if you were giving $10 to that project, you might very well hear back within a few hours from the teacher with just a quick message saying, hey, thanks for that donation that's gotten my project a little closer to the finish line. You could see other donors as they were giving to that very same project, and you'd even see the messages left by each of your fellow donors explaining why they picked that teacher's project. So you might see that you had a fellow donor in Michigan who also loved English when he or she was in high school, and that's their reason for giving to this very same project. Then the project is completed, and the teacher writes a celebratory initial thank you note that goes to every donor. The teacher, then when the materials are delivered, teacher takes photographs of the project in action, A little further into the project, the teacher writes an impact letter describing what students are learning. And so you, as a $10 donor, get all of that feedback and can even see a line-by-line cost report showing how the funds were spent. And donors who give $50 or more even get thank you letters that students handwrite for their donors.
We have talked a lot about something I'm about to quote you as having said, and I'm going to quote you because I think it's important that people hear this repeatedly. You have said that teachers know how to improve education, but they are a voice that is consistently overlooked or ignored. And one of the things that this project is said to accomplish is giving teachers more of a voice in the ongoing education debate. How so?
Well, it just strikes us that teachers on the front lines, hardworking teachers on the front lines, know their kids better than anybody else in the school system. And if we can tap into their frontline expertise and innovative potential, we can unleash better targeted, smarter, wiser micro solutions than what someone from on high might come up with. Mm-hmm. That's our ethic. And it's why we're also opening up all the data generated by the projects funded on our site, because we think that that data can give voice to teachers at the budget-making, policy-making table, because teachers are trying to tell the powers that be just what resources are most needed, what books are most effective, what topics are most important in the projects that they're creating on our site.
Hmm. You can give, as a donor, as much as you want, and the minimum donation is a dollar, which opens the doors, I think, to a lot of people for whom even $25 or $30 as a donation might be a challenge. What is the average size of an individual donation?
About $50.
Okay. And do you hear from your donors? I mean, what do they say about why they decided to help out?
Well, there's a mix of geographic loyalty. As we discussed, about 50% of donors want to support a classroom project in their own community. Another 50% are just trying to find a project matching a topic they love or, you know, that moves them mm-hmm. for a reason other than geography. And there's another 50-50 split between our donors, and that's where 50% of donors are giving because they believe in educational inequity as their primary cause. Another 50% of our donors are giving on our site not because education is their top issue, but because this is the place where they can be a full-fledged philanthropist no matter the amount of money that they're giving. Hmm. And so it's actually this model of crowdfunding which is drawing them even more than the issue of educational inequity.
So do you find that you have a lot of repeat donors? They'll fund one project and maybe come back a couple of months later when they can afford it and fund another one?
We do, and it's usually hearing back from the classroom which inspires a donor to come back to the site and give again. We also capture donors' interests. So, Mike, if you had done a search for English projects created by Charlotte teachers, we would save and capture that interest of yours. And once every few months or even once every month, we would alert you to new English projects from Charlotte teachers that we think will appeal to you.
How many projects are up on your website at any given time from across the country?
There are right now there are 40,000 classroom project requests live on our site. More than 300 of which that are live on the site right now are from Charlotte teachers.
Wow, I'm not sure whether we should be pleased by that or not. But what's the average? I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, it's daunting to us to think of 40,000 plus projects on our site where we've got to mobilize enough donors to fulfill most of them.
What's the average amount being requested by these teachers around the country?
Average project is about $650, and that ranges from a $100 project for a set of dictionaries to a $10,000 project to install a prefab playground.
Hmm. How many of these requests are fulfilled? In other words, how many are successful and how many fail to reach the goal? And if you don't reach the goal, what happens? Is there a timeline, a definite time period that you have to reach that goal and then it's done? How does it work?
70% of the projects that teachers create on our site get fully funded before they hit their 4-month expiration date. Of the 30% of projects that don't get fully funded. If there are any partial donations to a project and it hits its expiration date, we return those donations back to the donors as account credits, which they can apply to another project of their choice.
Wow. So you have to get, but there's nothing you can do as a teacher. If you see that your project is not being funded quickly and you're about to run out of time, is there a way for you to prod, or are you just at the mercy of donors being attracted to your project?
Well, we hope that teachers feel empowered to reach out to their network to get their project at least part of the way toward the finish line, or to get it all the way across the finish line if it's been initially funded by our larger community. And when we began, we at first presumed that teachers were not able to fundraise for their projects because so many of them were working in high-poverty communities. And what we didn't appreciate is that even teachers in high-poverty communities have a lot of friends on Facebook, a lot of former college classmates, ex-boyfriends and ex-girlfriends, aunts and uncles who want to support their work in the classroom. And so we've given teachers a whole sort of suite of tools to tap their networks and to bring at least some of the donors to their projects.
So DonorsChoose.org is open to all public and public charter schools in the country, to all teachers, all librarians, guidance counselors, school nurses, full-time teachers, and also full-time teachers who act as coaches and who work with students 75% of the time. I just want to go through some of the things that I saw on your website yesterday, and some of this has changed probably by today. For instance, at Mountain Island Lake Academy Elementary School here in Charlotte, a teacher is seeking funds for soccer balls, basketballs, footballs for PE class. A teacher of students with special needs at Metro School here in Charlotte is requesting funds for shredders to be used to teach his kids or their kids about recycling. As users of your website, people can search out these specific needs or projects. At Metro School, they need $460 and have $111 to go, and they've received funds from 47 donors for those shredders and have 38 days left to meet their goal. Who keeps track of all that? Is that just a computer program keeping track of all that?
It's a computer program keeping track of all that. And we know that one of the biggest validators for a donor who's thinking about which project to support is seeing that a whole lot of other donors have come before them to support a project. So I'm optimistic for that shredder project, just because if there are donors on the project already, that will attract further donors.
And you've also partnered with some major companies and some major local companies who do business with major brands to support classrooms. How does that work?
Sure. Well, we've partnered with folks like and institutions like the Leon Levine Foundation and Duke Energy, and with companies and foundations across the country, from Starbucks and Chevron to Google and the Gates Foundation. And we use major support actually to fuel citizen philanthropy. So when we work with a company or a foundation, we'll encourage them to do a match offer on our site for classroom projects meeting certain criteria, such as Arkansas art projects. And then Arkansas art projects require only half of the project cost to cross the finish line, because a partner's bringing it halfway there and citizen donors only need to provide the remainder. Mm-hmm. Or we'll encourage a foundation to underwrite Donors Choose gift cards that can be given to people to pick projects that they want to support. So even though we do involve and engage major supporters, we deploy their funding in a way that further democratizes philanthropy.
Every nonprofit clearly has operating expenses, operational expenses, and you have an incredibly robust website, which is the backbone of your effort. It cannot be cheap to have designed, operate, and use the data analysis that you come up with, and just to have the bandwidth to handle all of this. It can't be cheap, but I think you have an operational method here that other charitable funds ought to take a look at. You don't take any money out of the – if I give you $100 for a project, as I understand this, correct me if I'm wrong, that $100 goes to the project. None of it goes to you. And you have asked that if you give $100, give 15% more so that we can run the website, run the overhead that we have here. So it would be $115, but you don't have to do that. Is that correct?
You absolutely have it. And actually, the way we do it is if you're giving $100, say, to a Charlotte Teacher's English project, we encourage you, and as you said, we do not require you to allocate 15% of your donation to support our operating costs. More than 80% of donors keep that 15% allocation included in their donation to a project. And the income thus generated now pays all our bills. So it took us 10 years, but in 2010, we became a self-sustaining, break-even charity where donors voluntarily keeping that 15% allocation included paid all our bills. Mm. And so when we work with partners and donors, it's just about funding classroom projects on our site.
And how do you ensure that both the actual need of a teacher or classroom is legitimate and that the money that's been raised is actually used for the purpose it was intended?
Well, we do some basic validation before the project is even posted. And then when the project is funded, we do not give cash to the teacher. We purchase the resources for the teacher and have them delivered to the classroom. Meanwhile, we notify the principal what resources are about to be delivered. We even notify two or three other teachers at the same school who've used Donors Choose that their colleague is about to get some materials delivered. So there are just lots of people who can help ensure that the materials are channeled and delivered to the right classroom and used as promised. And so even if the project is therapeutic horseback riding for disabled students, we at Donors Choose pay the horseback riding stable to provide that service. If it's a shark dissection project, we're purchasing the shark cadaver and having it delivered to the schoolhouse door. And because we're delivering resources themselves rather than cash, that's a major both integrity measure and provides real ease of use for the teacher who does not have to cash a check and schlep a bunch of materials back from the store in their car and then fill something out in triplicate.
Charles Best, founder of DonorsChoose.org on WFAE's Charlotte Talks. In 2012, an estimated 350,000 people gave $41 million to classroom projects, and you said that that year your goal was to see 1 million people give $100 million to projects from 100% of the country's high-poverty schools. Were you successful?
Well, so as you just alluded to, our big, hairy, audacious goal is to inspire 1 million people to give $100 million to projects from 100% of our country's high-poverty public schools all in one school year. And we hope to and plan to hit that goal in just about 2 years' time. We're more than halfway there on an annual basis. This school year alone, our goal is to drive $75 million of giving to classroom projects. And we hope to hit that big, hairy, audacious goal in 2 years' time.
In North Carolina, you've raised nearly $12.5 million to fund nearly 30,000 projects through the generosity of 43,285 supporters as of yesterday. And according to your website, there are currently $13 million in projects nationwide waiting to be funded. That seems easily doable with a lot of small donors. But in 2010, one woman in California fulfilled all $1.3 million in projects on the board for that state. How often does that sort of thing happen? Because I know that Bill and Melinda Gates are involved in this, and I know that Stephen Colbert is on your board. So how often does that happen?
You know, when it happened the first time, we never thought it would happen again. But I'll mention what happened with that woman in California. I got a voicemail from an elderly woman, and it sounded like she was just having trouble using the site. But she would go on in just a few days to give us that $1.3 million to fully fund every single California teacher's project.
Amazing. It seems a no-brainer to me, the whole thing. I wish you the best of luck with it. DonorsChoose.org is the website, and Charles Best is its founder. Thank you very much for the hour.
Thank you so much, Mike.